Hi, welcome back to Ask Dr. Jen. In this episode, we talk about confidence. Specifically, how does it factor into your love life and to your sex life? Because it definitely matters in terms of like how good you feel in your body, how you feel, you know, about your level of attractiveness. Does that influence how you act towards others? And certainly if you are initiating or receiving, confidence comes in. Do you have confidence in yourself? Do you have confidence in your partner? And so ways to really unpack that and understand sort of when are you at your best and what might you be able to do to help enhance that, to increase it. So increase your level of confidence to have things go better. So I hope you tune in and I welcome your feedback.
Welcome back to the Pleasure Project with Dr. Jen Kennedy. Today's topic is confidence. So confidence really does matter. It certainly matters in the everyday, but it also matters in the bedroom. It likely is affecting your sex life and your sense of excitement about it or your maybe avoidance of it. So let's drop into that idea. Specifically, so confidence, you know, is about self-assurance. It's about you believing in your own abilities and qualities. So we have to look at this from sort of, let's start with a larger picture. So what has happened before affects where we are now. Like, that's just part of the deal. And the history that you have to your own self-confidence matters. So, you know, given this point in your life, I'm sure you've had highs and lows, times when you felt better or worse about it. But I want you to reflect a little bit about the history of your own confidence. Like, do you generally feel capable? Do you feel attractive? And attractive can be lots of things, right? Attractive can, for some people, can be smart. For others, it can be good looking. For others, they are really body conscious. Do you feel attractive? Because that is sort of historically factoring into how you feel and certainly how you show up in partnered play in terms of you initiating, in terms of you engaging. Like, you know, what is your history and what kind of messages do you have around your confidence? I would say that there's both psychological and interpersonal dynamics at play here. So let's unpack that. The first is psychological. Like, how do you perceive yourself? Do you compare yourself? Probably most of us do. So do you feel like you're like on a scale of 1 to 10? You know, how attractive are you in the world of dating or in the world of people your age and your general demographic? Do you feel like a 5? Do you feel like an 8? Like, are there times when you're around certain people that you feel better or not? Like, what are you actually telling yourself about your attractiveness? Like, how confident are you in, and attractive is not just like physical attributes. Yes, there's a certain amount of agreed upon, like, variables of, you know, are your features symmetrical, or are you a certain, you know, size, or, you know, whatever, shape, like anything like that. But really, psychologically, we see mismatches in this all the time. There's really attractive people that don't feel like they're attractive, like arguably commercially attractive people. And there's people that are like pretty mediocre that carry themselves with swagger, that they definitely feel like they are embodied and they are attractive. Like, there is something about that confidence that really comes through. So if you kind of drop into your own dialogue that you're having with yourself about this, do you feel attractive? Like, what is that, you know, what is that general conversation that you're having in your own mind? So that's sort of the first of, like, how do you perceive yourself? And then second, interpersonal, because how you perceive yourself is definitely going to factor into your interpersonal communications or interactions or partnered play. Obviously, like, if you're doing solo play, then maybe you can quiet some of those negative messages and just push through and have a good experience. But it gets much more complicated when you are choosing to interact with somebody else, when you're deciding to, you know, initiate play or get out in the dating world, or, you know, certainly in the bedroom, and you're going to be visible and you're going to be engaged. Like, it matters. Like, do you feel confident? How do you feel about being seen? How do you feel about being flirted with? Like, it seems obvious that people would want attention. I definitely hear that, like, in the rooms, you know, when people come in for sex therapy, they want attention and they say they want to feel desired. Not just feel desired, but they want to feel desired by their partner. And yet, also, I see that sometimes that can be really difficult when partners actually do give us attention and do turn toward us and do say they want us. That can send off, like, a whole cascade of fear and anxiety, because sometimes we're not really ready. And that goes back to our own psychology, right? Where are we psychologically with ourselves? But in the interpersonal dynamic, where are you? Do you tend to focus on yourself, or do you more prefer or tend to focus on your partner? It's interesting, it's somewhat like, you know, like, I see trends in this where women tend to focus on other, and men tend to more focus on self. That's not always true, but it definitely tends to be more common. But in that dynamic, like, is your confidence affected by, likely, how your partner's responding to you, like how they look at you? Do they seem desirous? Do you gauge your partner to be attractive? Because if you think your partner's attractive and they're desirous towards you, that might also increase your level of confidence. Like, oh, if somebody like this likes me, then I must be, you know, I must be worth it. But just sort of notice that dialogue, because a lot of this seems obvious, but it's quite subtle. And so looking at the messages that you're giving yourself in this interpersonal dynamic matters, because how you look versus how you feel might be very different. I've definitely seen a lot of insecure people who are quite beautiful in this world. So it's not necessarily a guarantee that one equals the other. And that comes up because in the interpersonal dance that we do with each other, I mean, certainly early on, physical attributes are prized pretty high. And that's what initially attracts people, is like, literally, what does your physical form look like? But as we start to look at people in longer-term relationships, that really shifts. I remember a dear friend of mine saying that, like, she didn't even see her husband's, like, form really anymore. It was about his essence. And I think that really does capture longer-term relationships. Is it's not about, I mean, yes, it can be nice if the person is put together, or certainly if there's something like novelty, in the way of novelty, like they have a really great new outfit, or, you know, maybe they shaved their beard or something, and there's like a modification and you're like, ooh, I like that. But so much of the time, it's actually just, how do I feel when I'm near this person? And that is largely about what has happened in the last 24 hours or the last week even, right? Have you paid attention? Have you honored the commitments that we agreed upon? Have you been available or respectful? Have you been in my life in a way that felt enhancing? Because, you know, attraction is interesting. And so the feelings of desire are not typically all that spontaneous after the initial period being like first year and a half or so. So much of the attraction is actually about the interpersonal dynamics. So in theory, the confidence should be higher in a partnership that is longer standing, because you know each other, right? There's more familiarity. There's been commonality. Certainly if you're married or if you're partnered for a long period of time, there's been agreements, verbal or nonverbal, about the way things happen between you. And so there should be a higher level of trust. There should be sort of like, we've worked these things out to expect certain things. And so that's a known entity. And so going into the bedroom, some of those things will definitely come with you. And, you know, depending on how much all of that is ironed out, or how much tension actually does remain, or unresolved things do remain, that's likely to interrupt. So confidence, I don't think it's really a static state. Like, it's not like you're a confident person or you're not. I mean, there's a general feeling that we can kind of sense about somebody if they do have a belief in themselves, they do feel worthy, they do feel in a healthy way, like entitled to pleasure, I would say. But the dynamic between you, you know, is ebbing and flowing. And so confidence is a dynamic feeling that might shift depending on your stress level, or, you know, how's work going? Do you feel like you're doing well there? How's parenting going? How's your exercise regimen going? Like, all of those things affect confidence. And so it's really, you know, it's important to know that it's how you feel, and it's also how you're being perceived by your partner. And yeah, I just think so much of that desire starts before you're actually in the bedroom. So I want to talk about automatic thoughts. That's a cognitive behavioral kind of tenet, is sort of the automatic way that our brain goes, this equals that. And I think this really comes into play with confidence, because, you know, if you think about, oftentimes with clients, I do a historical sexual inventory, like an intake of what was your first messages about sex, you know, in like adolescence, you know, young adulthood, you know, depending on how old they are, kind of through the whole life cycle, because I want to understand what messages did they get really early on. And then it's as much about what they say as how they say it. That's where I can kind of like also link it back to the confidence, because there's one thing to tell your narrative, and there's all sorts of like, I've been wronged, or I was a loser, or I am clumsy and awkward, or there's like, this was funny, like this crazy thing happened, or I did this embarrassing thing and it didn't kill me, and it's funny, and like, it's a good story now, right? So it's very different energetically when you can own your history and you can own your reality now. And automatic thoughts are part of that, in terms of like, when you talk about an event, or when you talk about yourself, or even a future thing you're anticipating, how do you talk about it? Like, is it that you're almost being swept away and backled? Is it that you have some agency in that dynamic, like where you have an intention of how it's going to go, or that you have some ability to manifest kind of the outcome that you want? What is the automatic thought that comes to mind? Because that thought likely affects how you act, right? So if you anticipate, and this is the general everyday, this is certainly also in the bedroom, if you feel awkward, if you feel ugly, unprepared, if you feel like a nuisance, if you feel any of those things, how are you behaving? What is the behavioral manifestation that then comes from that thought? Because if we kind of track it out, then like if we go, this equals that, like, okay, so I feel awkward, so then how do I behave? Probably I behave with some hesitancy. I might wait for you to go first, or I might need excessive validation before I move forward, or I might also try to get it over with as quickly as possible. Right? So we have to examine, like, what is the thought first, because that's likely driving the behavior and the way that you're showing up. So if you think about, like, with partnered sex, going into that, you likely are coming in with some expectations, or, and that might be of how it went last time or how it went the last 10 times. But like, how then does that expectation affect your confidence, affect what you're projecting in terms of how you're participating? And certainly like the behavioral piece, like what are you doing as a result? Now imagine if your thought was different, if it was more affirming, if it was more confidence-based, like if you had more affirmations like, I'm allowed to mess up, or this is just a big fun experiment, or we're in this together and I can be playful, or I just want to see if this is going to feel good, and if it doesn't, I don't really care, right? Like there's not so much attachment to doing it right or doing it perfectly. Boy, that is such a different headspace, because if you are sort of in those shoes, then the behavior that comes out of that, right, there isn't all this anxiety tied into it. There isn't like a make it or break it kind of thing. It's just like, I don't know, let's just see what happens. There's much more flexibility, and flexibility is a huge sign of mental health. So if you could be flexible in your outcome, if you can be open to sort of what presents, boy, you have a much better shot of having a really good experience sexually, because you're not so tied into a single outcome. And I find that more times than not, certainly as erectile dysfunction happens, it's almost like you psych yourself out, and then the next time it happens again, it's just like a panic attack. Like the expectation that this terrible response is going to occur again builds so much fear and anxiety that it manifests it again. So conversely, like if you can go into it with some openness and with some confidence that, hey, I can navigate this situation no matter what happens. So even if, you know, if the partner's not able to maintain an erection, or if one partner maybe can't reach climax or that type of thing, like it doesn't have to mean everything. I'm really a big fan of saying, hey, sex is this big umbrella. It's not just this one act that either, you know, means it happened or it didn't to completion. Rather, it's the whole dynamic. It's the whole intimacy of togetherness. And if you're not super tied to a single outcome, boy, that frees you up to have such a better experience between the two of you. And so also, I feel like it really rattles a lot of folks' confidence when they feel like there is only one way to have this all turn out. It just feels like a lot of pressure to get it right. So these are the kind of things that we discuss in the Pleasure Circle, which is a small group that I have, that I run a few times a year. And it's really focused on helping us understand kind of where do we come from, like what's our history, and that looks at various factors, including attachment, including your family of origin, your cultural piece, your relationship to pleasure, like body image, all of that stuff, you know. So we're looking at the history, we're looking at the messages that you give yourself, and do you want to change those messages? Like, are you willing to give yourself different messages? Because if you do, you're much more likely to have fun and probably be more attractive to your partner, because you will be more confident, right? There isn't this high pressure. So in the Pleasure Circle, it's week by week, we're looking at some of these dynamics, and I'm giving you prompts. Like today I'm asking you some questions, and we do that in the Pleasure Circle as well. Like I'm trying to help people really, because there's conceptually, like I think you probably are on board with me, right? Like, as I'm talking, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. But then really stopping to go, what do I actually do? What do I say to myself? How do I feel when the idea of sex comes up? If my partner initiates, or if I start to think about initiating, like, what are the automatic thoughts that come to mind for me? And what does that do for me? Like, so applying that stuff to your, you know, applying those questions and those ideas to your own life, I think is really powerful, can be so helpful. So if I'm currently in the process of taking the Pleasure Circle to and designing a couples program. So that might be something that you and your partner would want to do at a future date. But in the meantime, if you're interested in any of the Pleasure Circle, please do reach out. I'd love to give you more information on that. So I want to kind of then shift over to the various roles that come up with sex and how those play out. Specifically, the initiator. So it's not always like top and bottom and that type of thing, but there does tend to be often somebody in the relationship with more of the responsibility of initiation. Now, sometimes they initiate and then the other person takes over and really guides, you know, kind of the leads them through it, but they need that initial spark. And sometimes they are responsible for the whole experience, really, really leading it. Disproportionately, I would say men in straight relationships are responsible for initiating and carry through, which is a lot. Actually, it's a lot of responsibility. I am a big fan if both partners can initiate. And I know that's scary, and a lot of you women are not used to that. But I'm telling you, it feels really good to be wanted by your partner. And talk about confidence building. It's actually confidence building to be wanted and have someone else initiate. It's also confidence building to initiate successfully. Because when you say in your own mind, okay, maybe it's planned or maybe it's spontaneous, but like, I'm gonna start something here with this person, and it goes well, it feels good. It feels really good. Like, ooh, I had this idea. I'm taking care of us collectively by keeping an eye on the relationship, you know, kind of like it's multifaceted. I'm a really big fan of doing that, of taking initiative from both sides. I just think it's so empowering. And I think it also gives the partner who less often initiates some sense of how scary that can be, you know, like how difficult that role is, how much responsibility it has. And so if both partners are doing it, even if it's just occasionally, like, I think that's really helpful. But when you are in that role, when you are initiating, do you have your like tried and true sort of, this is what we do, this, this, and then this, or can it be playful? Can it be different each time? Like, do you go out of bounds and try different things? Again, I find that heterosexual couples tend to sort of have a routine, whereas same-sex couples are definitely more playful and unique in terms of how they initiate, who initiates, how it manifests, what even is considered sex. Like, it's much more open. So I'm presenting both options because I really do encourage you to mix it up a little bit. But part of the piece, I think, that keeps people to a script, I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but, you know, you get what I'm saying, like the routine approach, is that it's had some level of success. And so you're assuming that it's going to work again in the future. There's some rationale to that. It's not as big a risk to do something as it is to do something different, because you might not have the same outcome, but honestly, you might not have the same outcome anyway, because the same thing or the same place or the same time or the same approach might not work the next time, because there's variables in both of you. Maybe the novelty of that way is gone, or, you know, maybe the other person has factors that you didn't anticipate. You know, maybe they have a backache, or they have cramps, or they, you know, they've got X, Y, and Z happening. And so that same approach just doesn't land the same. And so does that affect your confidence, or can you adjust? Also, this piece of, do you feel really locked into like a blueprint of how this is going to play out? Because I find that when you have some mental rigidity like that as an initiator, it can be problematic. It doesn't seem to work out as well. Whereas if you're just sort of open to what manifests, and that might just be some making out, that might be, you know, body to body contact, that might be the whole deal. you know, with or without cuddling afterwards. So it's like, you know, if there's some flexibility about how this is all going to play out, it's going to go better for both parties. I'll tell you that. So do you pay attention? The other question I guess I really want to say is when you're initiating, people can really get in their head like I feel nervous. I feel, how do I look? How do I sound? You know, like, are they into it? And it's like, are you really paying attention? And it can be hard, but are you paying attention to both your internal experience as well as how your partner's responding? Like, you know, are you being relational in that exchange, or are you being directional? Like, are you really trying to like make it happen? Or do you have enough, you know, openness, flexibility to like let it sort of get a feedback loop from your partner? Because, you know, so much of this I find is that like the partners often don't have a hard no decided. It's about the approach. It's about the interaction, especially with female partners. A lot of times it takes a little bit of foreplay. And so the energy you bring in to the initiation really, really matters. Like, it matters. And confidence is part of that. Not just like, I know what I'm doing and I don't need your help. It's more like confidence, like, I got this and I'm here and I'm making eye contact and I'm, you know, responding to your touch, or, you know, responding from a pressure standpoint of what you seem to be indicating, or, right, there's this piece of like, I'm feeling confident in my role, because in that role as initiator, there is a certain amount of responsibility, and the other person is looking at you with, can I trust you? Can I count on you? Can I give in to you? Can I participate in this with you? So if you're having a lot of doubts, if you're having more defeating type thoughts, then likely that's getting introduced between you. That's being vibrationally felt and experienced by your partner, which might also create some hesitation. And if it's your way or the highway, that's another thing. Like, you're not taking input from your partner, you know, you're less likely to get a receptive response in your initiation. So I find that oftentimes the feedback loop is really, it's tricky, because if someone's hesitant when they start and when they initiate, and then they get some negative or neutral or ambivalent response, then it starts to like really shake their confidence. And then they oftentimes abort the whole process and like abort the mission, you know, and that doesn't end well. And then there's hurt feelings and, you know, kind of some blame that can happen too. Every partner is different, and even sex with the same person can be different. So also, as an initiator, don't assume that just because you've been a great lover with a person from the past means that those same moves are going to work great on a new partner. It sounds obvious, but like, it's amazing that people don't get that, right? Like, it's like, well, I've been able to, you know, be successful in this with other people. It's like, okay, well, everybody's body is slightly different and their mind factors into what they like, and they need to have agency in that process of saying what they like and what they want. So it's not that you're either a good lover or you're not. It's depends on the dynamic between the two of you. So can you articulate that? Can you negotiate that? Can you be open to sort of what presents? And your same partner, like I said, might even change. Like, can you adjust in that dynamic? So switching gears over to the person that's more in the receiving role, and what's involved in that? So some couples do schedule sex. I know it doesn't sound romantic, but it's really quite helpful. It can be very helpful. But say it's not scheduled, so you didn't know it was coming, and then your partner initiates, and you're like, oh, wow, this is happening now. Okay, or is it, right? There's sort of that negotiation in your mind, and what is your decision-making process? I guarantee that part of it is, yes, it's the psychological we talked about earlier, but also it's, how do you feel about your partner in this moment? and how are they approaching you probably makes a big difference. Right? Are they, first of all, did you like them in the last 24 hours or in the last 7 days? In general, do you like who they are? Are you holding resentment? Are you, you know, any of those things? But then also, are they taking in your cues back? Do they understand that maybe you need a little bit of a warm up to really, you know, get on track or get on board with what's happening? And then going back to that piece about you, like, do you feel deserving? Do you, not just like, will you do this, but like, do you want to do this, or what would help you want to do this? And if you do want to do this, like, is it, and again, it doesn't have to be like one way. Like, sometimes we have sex for relational maintenance, meaning like it helps the relationship to have sex, you know, and sometimes you can kind of feel ambivalent about it and it can be okay. My preference, though, is that you really get the type of sex that you really want to be having. And so sometimes that's a matter of us really kind of getting quiet and thinking about, what do I actually like? What do I want? And knowing that, and then feeling like you actually deserve to ask for it, like you can actually get what you want, much more likely if you can articulate it. And sometimes that's in the moment, although that might be a lot of pressure. I am a big fan of having those conversations outside of the bedroom. So that can be in your couples therapy. That can certainly just be the two of you out, you know, in a private space. If you can sort of, and that's one of the things we also do in the pleasure circle, is really mine for your unique profile of the types of things you like. And not just exactly sexually, but like in the larger picture. That might be, you know, if you think about your senses, so smells, like, are you a person that likes perfume or cologne? Are you a person that likes indoors, outdoors? Do you need to be warm? Like, some people are really cold and they don't want to have sex when they're cold. Or do you need to have like a really meaningful conversation with your partner before you're more in that space? Like, knowing some of those things and really like understanding your own profile helps you be more prepped to shift into that space. So I think that's a really useful exercise to do as well. Like, what tends to prime you into that more desirous space? And confidence is probably part of it. It's confidence in your partner. It's confidence in yourself, right? Like, how do I look? Do I deserve this? What do I want? Can I articulate it? Definitely it factors in. And can I be vulnerable with this person? Can I let my guard down? Can I really accept pleasure? Because that is a dynamic that isn't just like, I'm not talking about being performative, right? Because that's easy in a different way, but actually allowing it in a more meaningful way is really powerful. So do you know what you want? And can you, or will you, would you be willing to communicate that to your partner? Because I think that could be incredibly helpful. I also find that so much of the time, the initiators are working in the dark. They don't really know what would help their partner. They're just trying. They're trying their past moves. They're trying kind of spontaneously what they think would be received well. But if you can actually have a conversation, a more practical conversation about what are some of the variables that increase my want, then I think that can, it starts to take you out of the dark and into like, oh, this is actually good information. This is helpful. So one of the questions I guess I would ask too that might help kind of you prime yourself is, when do you feel your best? Like, when do you feel most confident? When do you feel like, yeah, like I'm a badass, or I am, you know, it might be when you finish a big project or when you're in your work mode, or it might be, but why? Like, what's going on in that dynamic? Like, do you feel attractive, or do you feel, you know, like attractive in the way of looks, or do you feel smart? Do you feel interesting? Do you feel capable? Like, What are the things when you feel your best? Because first of all, doing more of those things is going to help, like, right, being in your power, being in your confidence. And also, those are primers. If you do more of those, you're probably more likely to be in a place that you want to connect, that you sort of are like, this would be a time when, because sex is interesting, right? It's, I mean, yes, it's for procreation sometimes, but most of the time, it's actually not about that. Much of it is about other things, including just pleasure and fun and expression. Sometimes it's a power exchange. Sometimes it's, like this animalistic thing of just getting off. Like it has a lot of different purposes. So the interpersonal piece and your level of confidence, as well as your feeling of how much confidence do I have in other matters. And also understanding sort of when you feel your best, pulling from those moments to understand what would increase that feeling for you in the here and now. So I could imagine, a lot of like working moms will say, I am exhausted. I've got this laundry list of stuff I got to do for the household. I cannot just shift gears. I'm not interested in shifting gears to prioritize sex. So understanding, like, when do you feel your best? Okay, so is that when everything's done? Is that when you don't feel like you're identified solely as mom and so you're, like, on a vacation? Or on a date? Or, like, understand sort of what is the profile of when you feel your best and how can you start to pull some of that into your daily life? Because, yes, you know, some of these things are just sort of like, we got to work within the system that we're living, but they are also, they can be influenced by how you show up. And confidence just, it's so attractive. It really is. It's such a intriguing, factor that pulls people toward you and pulls you toward your desire. So I invite you to think about, when are you most confident and how does that, or how could that show up for you in the bedroom? I would love to hear your feedback, and I encourage you to listen to other episodes. One thing that does come to mind is spectatoring. That was one of my first episodes, which is pretty short, but it's talking specifically about kind of the inner chatter. So check it out, and I would love to hear your feedback and also questions. If you have questions about this or questions in general that you want answered by Ask Dr. Jen, please tune in and let me know those.